What's going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 62 of the MM Arcade Podcast. Rob, man, I'm exhausted. It's been a big week. I'm tired, but I'm ready to record the cast. It's going to be an
excellent
episode.
Excellent. Because you leave soon, correct?
Yeah, I'm traveling overseas this weekend for work, which I'm very excited about. But it's also put us in a bit of a pickle because we're having to record two episodes this week. We really want to try and be covered, so yeah. We're not missing any beats. So this episode is going to be UFC Fight Night Mexico City reactions. And hopefully, if we can record later this week, we will talk about our predictions for UFC 314. We do not want to miss that. It's going to be a big card.
I am trying to be more consistent. I understand 95% of episodes that are missed is because someone in my family is sick or I have to go somewhere or some other reason, okay? I'm doing my best. But I am really thankful to our lovely and supportive fans. I see you guys in the comments there, especially when I mentioned, me and Johnny just kind of went over what this cast is about. About it's just really laid back, just having a chat, having a chill. Yeah. And you guys get it. And it's really reassuring to see that we have, you know, our fans and supporters and the guys that actually listen to the episode understand that and supportive of it. So thank you. Thank you very much. Because let me tell you, trying to watch UFC Fight Night Mexico at a three-year-old's birthday party.
On your phone?
On my phone was a nightmare. I got my four kids running an absolute muck in this multi-level kids maze. Okay, one of them's crying over there. The other one's pushing another kid over here. I'm trying to watch Moreno and Ursegg throw down. And because it was a super high level striking fight, it was so good to watch. I felt like when I was watching it, I felt like the rounds just went by, you know? But it was tricky, okay? It was tricky. But I do it for you so that you guys can hear me yap on about these big fights.
We are really looking forward to chatting about it. As Rob said, super technical. Mm-hmm. I came away really enjoying the fight, even though unfortunately our homeboy Aussie lost. But we'll get into that. We'll get into some other news bits as well for the UFC. So if you are new, please do like, subscribe. It really does help the channel. We're slowly inching towards 34,000-35,000 subs. So we'll get there soon. But Rob, as mentioned, UFC Fight Night, Mexico City. Let's react to the main event. Brandon Moreno defeats Steve Ursegg, Astro Boy, via decision. What were your thoughts on the fight?
Well, what can I say? I guess I have split feelings for the first two rounds. I thought Moreno started very, very well. He started on point. He started aggressive. He took the fight to Ursegg. Now, does this mean I'm wondering if Steve started the fight slow? Okay, because obviously in a five-round fight, losing the first two is not a huge deal as long as you really start to ramp it up like a Marab in the 3-4-5.
Yeah.
Now, Moreno cemented the first two rounds more or less, okay? And he also kind of created He created like a hesitancy. I don't want to say he created a hesitancy. I feel like he created respect for moving in, which may have forced Steve to move away further than he would have if he didn't cement those first big shots with the right hand over the top, crowding that space, closing that distance super well. Mm. So I just thought, I don't know. You talk. I gotta get my thoughts together.
It was such a – obviously, first round went right to Moreno. Moreno just kept landing that right overhand. And I was
scared.
Too
many times.
Yeah, too many times. And I was scared, obviously, for Ursa coming off that Kai Kara-France KO. Mm-hmm. Clearly, Kai just has crazy power because Moreno was heading in with some decent shots. One, he kind of dropped him, but not really. Like, it technically maybe counted as a countdown, almost as if he, like, kind of got knocked back down to his knee and stood back up after a big shot. I was scared that he was going to get knocked out again, but he wasn't, which was good. His chin was hanging in there, but clearly he lost the first. For most of the rest of the fight, it was just so close and so close to the stage where, like, Moreno was still doing those big overhands. Steve was being super, super technical, really clean, really crisp. I thought Steve, if you actually break down the strikes, he was rolling with the punches and defending and ensuring that Moreno missed a lot of his strikes. Mm-hmm. But in the end, we keep talking about how when the rounds are close, it's going to go up to the judges. And like, I got some of the stats here. These were the stats that appeared on the screen, not like the post-fight ones. Round two, 20 to 18 significant strikes to Steve. Round three, 12 to 10 significant strikes to Moreno. Round, and it's like, it was that close. And I think Moreno won, right? I'm not going to be biased here. I do think Moreno won. I think he just had the bigger ooh moments. Like when he was hitting Steve with those big right overhands, everyone was like, ooh, that's big. And I can see that leaving an impression in the eyes of the judges. Whereas Steve maybe in some rounds landed a bit more, but they were the more technical, crisp, and not the bigger impacting shots. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I guess like, because I was trying to explain my thought process when we first started, and it came out like a jumbled mess.
All good.
But I feel like I just needed a little bit more from Steve.
Yeah, I agree.
The whole fight, because he obviously started building up his momentum. In the later rounds, he started building up his momentum. He started getting more confident in the range and the distancing that Moreno was doing, and started to find his reach with his jabs and his crosses and his punches. He was starting to read Moreno's explosive, you know, entries into his punches, and he just looked much better. 3, 4, 5 onwards, you know, at the end of two, he started working into that. And but the problem was because he was building momentum slowly. The slower starts for those sort of guys really bites him in the butt at the end of the fight, because 1, 2 gone, 3, 4, 5 super close.
Yeah,
I think the ending of five, like finishing a fight on your back, always looks terrible. Like in my opinion, when he fell to the ground, this is no fault of his own. So it's not like he just fell over or pulled guard, right?
Yeah,
it just looks bad. So round five, once he went to the ground, I was like, it just looks terrible to finish on your back. But yeah, I just feel like I think Steve needed to start his volume strikes a little bit earlier in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, I think obviously there would have been some hesitancy with, and you could see also Moreno taking a confidence in that with his last loss to Kai.
Yeah.
Steve's last loss to Kai. I felt like there was some hesitancy with Steve to, especially with the way Moreno started, the way he was pushing in, super aggressive. He landed that right hand over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I think once Steve got through that first round, landed, like felt those shots, knew he could take them, his chin was intact, he started building confidence from that.
Yeah.
But maybe the hesitancy from the Kai fight started him slower. But I feel like he just needed if round three was round two, it could have gone either way, if that makes sense.
Dude, so I've just pulled up the stats, and as I said, the significant strikes that I talked about before, the ones that appeared on the screen, but those are always like kind of impromptu and not the accurate ones. This is what UFC stats say, and this is giving me such a weird impression of the fight. Again, let me be very clear. I think Moreno won. Maybe not 49-46. I thought it was a bit closer. I would have given at least one more round to Steve, where it was like 3 rounds to Moreno, 2 to Steve. But tell me what you think about this, bro. Steve Ersig, 116 significant strikes overall. Brandon Moreno, 89. In the first round, Steve Ersig, 25 to 21 significant strikes. Round 2, 27 to 21. Round 3, 20 to 10. Round 4, 25 to 19. And round 5, 19 to 18. These stats are saying every round, Steve landed more. Is that not crazy?
Mate, you're telling me that. I'm trying to think.
But here's the thing. It's not like watching that fight live and then looking at those stats, it's not the impression that I got. Like, yes, Steve was landing a lot and clearly had the volume and clean technical strikes. But when I come away from some of those rounds, especially the first, I'm like, well, Moreno clearly won that. Like he had the bigger shots and the bigger, you know, the bigger impact, the more damage. So it just confuses me looking at those stats and just my visual impressions of the fight. I don't know.
Yeah, it does. Well, Steve did well with his leg kicks in the first round. He was using them much more earlier in the fight than later.
His jab was on point too.
It really was. Yeah. I thought Moreno defensively was super high level that fight. Mm. I thought defensively he played so well, like so well. Yeah, the stats surprise me.
They're weird. I hope these are accurate, but this is UFCstats.com. So, like, these guys have never fought before, so it's not like it's their previous fight or anything.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure these are accurate.
Yeah, it's crazy to see, because like what you said, I didn't feel that in the fight. I felt like the first two rounds were pretty clearly Moreno, with 3, 4, and 5 kind of much closer, like either way sort of things, which is still sketchy to leave it like that. But
yeah,
with the fifth probably finishing up with Moreno because Steve ended up on his back.
Yeah, and that's never a good look. I, funnily enough, would have given the second to Steve, but again, like the rounds were so close, and then when you leave it up to the judges and when your opponent has the bigger right overhands, it just looked cool, sounds like they're more impactful. I know why it was given to Moreno. I know why I would consider Moreno to have won that fight. I just found that breakdown to be very, very interesting. I wanted to ask you, man, so there was a big talking point after this fight. Steve Ercegg fights Alexandre Pantoja for the title, rocketed up to the title opportunity. He had like 3 fights or whatever it was. He's only been in the UFC for a couple of years or so. And then he loses that, and then he fights Kaikara France, gets knocked out, and now he fights Brendan Moreno and he loses. Has his career been a little bit mismanaged?
Yeah. Yeah. He's been thrown straight into the crucible. He's like a trial by fire sort of guy. They've fed him to the best light flyweights in the world, literally. Yeah. It's although I did take confidence from, granted, like, he lost, and I'm upset that he lost. I was going, like, he's our boy Steve, right?
Same.
And I saw some outstanding moments from him. Like, when he gets into his groove and when he starts picking people apart and he's confident in his defense and he starts, like, just volume striking the way he does, he looks so good. I just needed that around earlier, I think.
Yeah.
Hard to do because a fresh Moreno was coming at him, like violently, okay? Yeah. So I'm not saying he should have done this or shouldn't have done that. I'm just objectively saying he needed to get on the roll a little earlier, half a round earlier, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now
and maybe take more risks?
That's it's super hard to do after getting clipped the fight before. I know firsthandedly, like, it shakes you. When you get stopped, and then your next fight is always rocky. Like, if anything. So, and that's where I'll circle back to the question you asked, like, was he mismanaged? I take a lot of confidence for Steve from this fight because he went into a fight with Brandon Moreno, who's honestly second best flyweight at the moment of all time.
Mm.
Okay. He goes into this fight against Brandon Moreno. He gets through the fight, gets clipped heaps of times in the first round, gets through the second, draws out 3, 4, 5, like much closer, goes to a decision loss. Upsetting, but he's now kind of shaken off that trauma from the previous fight. He's shaken off the worry, the doubts, the hesitation, the fears that his chin isn't up to scratch with these guys. And I'm excited for his next fight now.
He is too good of a fighter to be on a 3-fight losing streak. Like, just too good. And it's the way I do believe that he's been. It's hard because in the last episode, Rob, you and I were just talking about how it's actually a really good opportunity because if he beats Moreno, right back in that conversation, right?
Yeah.
But then obviously the contrary to that is that if he loses, then he's on a 3-fight losing streak, and then what do you do with him? We've seen many, many, many people on a 3-fight losing streak in the UFC get cut. Now, I don't think Steve is going to get cut, but it's just not a good look. He needs to fight someone that's a little bit lower in the rankings to kind of build back up. And I just wonder, what is the hypothetical and the alternate universe where Steve Ercegg is managed a little bit better, is kind of given a gradual push of increasing competition, and then he eventually fights Pantoja? Like, what happens then? Because imagine if he did beat Pantoja, right? It was a close fight. And then he gets knocked out. There's still an argument there that his career was mismanaged because he didn't have enough high-ranked fights against all those killers in the division. Mm. It's just, yeah, I'm so torn on this, man. I'm genuinely torn. Yeah, I just want what's best for Steve.
I think he was definitely thrown to the wolves. Okay, there's no doubt. But he's still pretty young. Like, he's still 29.
He's 29, yeah.
Yeah, he's had these exposures to super high-level guys.
Yeah.
Like, he's now taken the confidence back in his chin from his last fight with Brandon Moreno.
Yeah.
I think he's in a good spot. I definitely believe he needs to, you know what, what rank is he? He's still like ranked 8 or something like that because
he's ranked 8. I don't know if the rankings have changed since.
Well, he's ranked 8 because he jumped the queue. So, and he's been fighting top dogs.
Yeah.
You know, the entire time. So
yeah.
Maybe fight 7.
Or like fight Asu Amabayev, who's just below him.
Yeah,
9, right?
Yeah, fight 9. Yeah. Or, you know what I mean? Like, give him a fight to, you know, establish himself. Like, no fight is easy. There are no easy fights in the UFC, especially not once you enter the top 10. No. But give him a fight that isn't with dudes in title conversations right now, mm-hmm. right? Like, especially after the fact that all he's been fighting is dudes in the title conversations.
Yeah, top 5 dudes. Like, yeah. I reckon he was set to fight Asu Amabayev. I think it makes sense to just rebook that fight. He's ranked just lower than him. I think that makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't want him to fight someone like Tigir Ulanbekov because I think he has a lot of potential. He seems to be a straight killer. Asu is a good fight. But in terms of next fights for Moreno, this is a really interesting position now because Kai is probably going to fight Pantoja for the title. That seems to be the direction that they're going. Is Moreno really going to fight Roy Val again? Like, who out of them is in the conversation to fight Pantoja next? Given all their history of fighting each other, it's just a bit of a mess.
Yeah, true. Mate, because like if Pantoja wins, you know, I think Moreno
Pantoja's got no one at that stage.
I think Moreno does sit out and like he does, this is what he's going to do, I think. He does sit out and wait for the winner of Kai and Pantoja.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a lot of options right now. He's now two wins since fighting for the title.
Yeah.
Two very good
wins though. Like Amir win was very good.
And like I thought the version of Moreno we saw fighting Steve was one of these like just classic Moreno. Yeah. He's outstanding. I thought his defense was on point. I thought his striking was on point, especially because you saw him take bigger risks with his big shots because of Steve's previous fight. I thought that adjustment was pretty interesting to see, especially with someone like he leans so forward on his lead leg, you know, and kind of baits out punches the way he does.
Where
does he go? I do think he just waits for a title shot. You know, I think with his fingers crossed that Kai wins, but he's fought both guys.
For the sake of the division, let's be real. Like, if you're looking at it from like a competition perspective, Kai winning will open up a lot more opportunities, right? Mm. Pantoja winning puts the division in a bit of a weird spot. But I would also say that there is an argument to have Roy Val fight Moreno because I think they're one apiece. And even though Moreno lost against him recently, you could run that trilogy. That could be a great, you know, fight night card in some big city, you know what I mean, as the main event, or even on a big card. I think that makes a lot of sense. You figure out Pantoja and Kai, and then the winner of Roy Val and Moreno fights the winner of Pantoja and Kai. I think that's the division there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Tyra, you got Manel Kapp. Kapp is in the conversation too. I don't know what you do. Kapp is so good, man.
What does Steve do now?
I think Steve has to fight Asu.
How many times have I guess the fight. I'm looking at his show dog now. I said he had won twice since his title shot. No, he lost to Brandon. My bad.
No, I thought you were talking about Moreno.
Before. I guess, mate, that division is just tied up, isn't it?
Bretosha's just too good, man.
Like. Well, and everyone's fought everyone. It's been such a slogfest to get to the top with no,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but that's why Steve has been catapulted. That's why. What's his name? Freaking not Tyra, but the Japanese guy that came in, the other guy, Kaya Sakura. That's why he was chucked in there with Pantoja. Like, the UFC is like trying to figure out this weird situation with the division where Pantoja's fought everyone and beaten everyone in most cases. So like they're trying to solve that with just new fighters and up and comers, just chuck him in there, which is not the solution.
Straight to Pantoja. Yeah, they did the exact same thing to Kai. Crazy, eh?
Pretty much. Let us know what you think in the comments below. How should the UFC solve the flyweight division? But we'll see Steve back. Like, he's not going away anywhere. He's done the UFC a favor, by the way.
What do you think he does? He probably needs a break, maybe.
Does he? Does he need a break? I don't think he, like, was really rocked in that fight where and took crazy amounts of damage where he needs a big break, but, you know?
Yeah, like I said, I think he would have taken a lot of confidence back that he had lost from the fight before.
Yeah.
And he can now move into that next fight. I think he's got to be – he needs another fight, needs to get back on the horse, you know, shake Moreno off. Mm-hmm. But five rounds is always tricky. You know, there's always niggly injuries that come from that. But, you're right. I think he does need to get straight back on the horse. He's got his confidence now and just get back in that winning column.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. And obviously, we had a bunch of other fights happen in Mexico City. Drew Dober got brutally TKO'd. I don't know if you saw that, man. Really late stoppage, like constant hammer fits, and Drew didn't know where he was, just holding on with the ankle pick. And then he still got up and he was like, why'd you stop the fight? It was kind of crazy. But also, Raul Rosas Jr. defeats Vince Morales. I wasn't as impressed with that. He still got the win, but it was a bit of a weird fight. But yeah, decent card all around. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. But next up, as mentioned, we've got a bunch of UFC news that we want to talk about. Rob, we need to talk. We need some more matchmaking. I know we've done a lot of matchmaking in this episode so far, but lightweight
matchmaking fries my brain. When I was trying to work through Brandon and Ursaeg just now, my brain was just locking up.
Are you ready to do it again in the lightweight division? Because that's also in a mess.
You know, I think the lightweight division is the most exciting division right now.
Sure. I think, don't disagree, man.
I think it's wicked. It is just death row. You know what I was looking at just before this episode was Dustin Poirier's fight record. It is wild.
It's so good, man.
It's wild, man. So good to see. Like, yeah. It's just death row in the lightweight division at the moment. Like the top five, dude, that guard up there right now, it's just killers, man.
But especially with Ilia Topuria entering the mix, right? Like he's the whole big story over the past week was he obviously vacated the title at featherweight. But apparently he said the UFC told him, we promise you a title opportunity if you vacate. That's what he told Spanish media. So he vacated and now he thinks in his head that he's definitely going to be getting the fight against Islam Makhachev. Or I think he said as a backup he would fight Charles Oliveira. And now they've gone back and forth. Charles is like, you need to respect the division. There's been a lot of guys here for a very long time. Da 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 da. So what do you reckon, Rob? What do you reckon of the UFC promising Topuria a title opportunity? And should they book it against Islam?
I don't know what was promised or anything, but I feel like if you're in a lower division and you vacate the title, you should go straight to the top of the pecking order. It's just
straight
like
into a title shot.
Title shot or contender. Like,
but that's
one
the big
fight
thing right now. It's either he fights his son for the title, or because him and Charles have been going at it and they're two top contenders, they fight each other.
Mm. Yeah.
What do you reckon? What would you prefer?
I'd like to see him go straight into a title shot. Okay. Understandably, it can be tricky that way because there are a lot of guys like styles make fights. So if the champion of a lighter division has a better style to beat the guy in the higher division, where's the fairness of that? Because that guy may not get through 10 guys to get to a title shot. He may not get through the contenders. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's tricky. I just feel like there should be a certain amount of weight for being the champion of the division already. You know, like especially and doing the thing where you're like, I want to move up. I'm vacating the title, which is the right thing to do. It doesn't hold anything up.
Yeah.
And just making the move. I feel like there should be some weight and some respect given to that action, you know, course of action.
Yeah. The thing that I keep thinking about, especially over the past year and some of the fights that the UFC have made, for instance, Khalil Roundtree against Alex Pereira, some other examples as well, where they're clearly making the fights that they think are the most exciting. And not to say that Islam versus Charles is not exciting. It would be. But Islam's already beaten Charles somewhat recently. Islam has not fought Ilia Topuria before. He is the champion in featherweight, dropping his title, moving up. That would clearly be the bigger, and on paper, like, it'll probably sell more, especially with massive. Spain getting behind Topuria. It would be absolutely huge. So based on that, I think they would just make Topuria versus Islam Makhachev. Though Makhachev's team apparently is not keen on it because they feel like he needs to earn his keep. What do you reckon about that?
Yeah, I can also see where they're coming from. I went on a whole spiel that, like, there should be some gravity to relinquishing the title and moving up. Because he is a champion. Mm-hmm. But I can also see the side of the argument for the guys in the division that have been like, brother, like, I've had to slog, especially in the lightweight division, like, I've had to slog my way to the top of this division. And it is death row there. And there's so many, there's so many good styles there. There's like, mm-hmm. you've got strikers, you've got grapplers, you've got guys who can do it both. Mm-hmm. The champion is like a guy that can do it both with super high level grappling. It's mate, I'm on the fence. I can't give you a clear answer.
And you know what's funny as well? We have a clear number one contender still in Armin Sarukian, who I want to give credit to him, by the way. He has just said, and he knows the position that he's in with the UFC. He pulled out very late in his last potential fight against Islam. He knows that he needs another win, maybe two. But he's like, I'll fight anyone. I'll fight whoever the UFC put in front of me. I'll fight Gaethje, who obviously is coming off a win. He could fight Max Holloway. So, like, I don't know what we do. And Dustin Poirier is looking for his retirement fight as well. You can't forget about him. Dan Hooker is there as well. You know, he was meant to fight Justin Gaethje. You could have them run it back. You could have Gaethje fight Sarukian. There's so many opportunities, man. Like, I'm personally the most excited about lightweight right now. It's just, as you said, it's killer's row.
Yeah. And I'm on the fence. I can see both points of argument from both sides.
Yeah.
Okay. And I agree with both of them. But I think UFC is going to do what makes them the most money.
Yep.
you know? And, and mate, Makhachev and Topuria, mm-hmm. it's going to be big bucks. Big bucks.
I can see it in lights now, man. It would sell a million pay-per-views.
That fight's going to happen. Going to happen.
And why risk it? Why risk Topuria fighting Charles? Not to say that I don't think Topuria would beat Charles. I think that he's primed to do so, given his style and everything. But why would you risk that big fight? Why not just chuck him in there while the iron is hot? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think stylistically, Charles is a better fight for Topuria than Makhachev.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So let's see what happens, but I wanted to have a bit of a discussion there. Next up, though, we're going to talk about welterweight. This is matchmaking heaven in this episode. If you like matchmaking, this is the episode for you. I know. This is the last one. I promise this is the last one because light heavyweight, which we'll talk about next, is a bit more clear. So Sean Brady, after his fight destroying and dominating Leon Edwards, he is now the number one ranked welterweight, according to the latest rankings, ahead of Shavkat Rakhmonov. Can I just get your opinion on that first? What do you think about him shooting up after beating Leon, his first, Shavkat second, and Leon's third now?
That's just the ranking system, though. That's that stuff can happen.
Yeah.
It's what it is, you know?
But now you have, like, Shavkat has been pretty much promised the opportunity. And the thing that I keep forgetting about Shavkat that maybe some people don't recognize is that, yes, Shavkat got injured, so he couldn't fight Bilal. That's why Bilal's fighting JDM, right? But let's not forget, he took the fight against Ian Garry where he didn't need to and won, and he could have just waited. So, like, the UFC needs to do him a favor for that. And I don't think Dana's someone to forget that kind of thing, right?
No, so, definitely not. Definitely not.
Yeah.
But what's the problem? That Sean Brady's now ranked higher than Shavkat.
It's just no problem. I just find it interesting. And I posed the same question to you last week that Sean Brady's almost bullied himself into title contention. You know? Yeah. And the rankings think so too.
You know what's funny? I'm so happy he's there. I don't know why it makes me so happy. I don't know. It just does. Like, he's just, you know? I don't know. If you guys understand the way I feel, let me know, dude. But, yeah, like rankings don't matter too much when it comes to title conversations.
Yeah.
That's why being in the top 10 is the most lucrative position you can be in the UFC, mm-hmm. because doors open every single day. You're one fight away potentially from a title shot. Like always, mm-hmm. when you're in the top 10, you just win in outstanding fashion, or you are ready when a door opens and there you are fighting for the title.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, we see it across divisions, and this is no different. That's why Jack's fighting for the title now.
Yeah, from ranked fifth. Can mm-hmm. I ask you, and I'll take the matchmaking out of your hands. Shavkat, in my opinion, is probably going to fight Bilal, right? Like they did the face-off. Shavkat did them a favor with the Ian Garry fight. They said he's going to get it. Dana said that on his Instagram live, so that seems to be the fight to make. Would you be against Sean Brady versus Kamaru Usman?
I would love to see that fight.
It'd just be a good fight.
What's Kamaru doing now?
The reason people might think I'm crazy by suggesting that. But also remember, Kamaru did the UFC a fight favor by fighting Khamzat Chimaev on short notice, a division up. So, like, there's a lot of favors that need to be repaid here. So they might put him against Sean Brady. I think that makes sense too.
I need to see what's Kamaru been up to.
He's just like, he must be dealing with injuries. He must be dealing with something niggling, because he went on his podcast recently and was like, when I'm ready, I will be there. I will fight whoever. And I think he did say recently that Sean Brady would be one of the people that he could fight. So I understand why people might not think he deserves it, because he's had a couple of losses. But to give him credit, he fought Khamzat and did a pretty good job on short notice, a weight class above. The UFC, he wants to repay him for that.
He did a better job than I.
didn't say that.
You were thinking it though. Shut up.
I'm not going to say anything. He just did a good job.
All right? I'm joking. No, he did a stellar job, dude.
Yeah.
But that was going on 2 years ago.
God, and was it really that long ago?
Yes, dude. October 2023.
No way.
And he's 37 now.
He hasn't fought for almost 2 years.
Mate, he's
That's crazy.
I just feel like he's just, the clock's ticking, man. It's ticking. I don't think he can sit out and there was rumors of injury all the way back, like when he was a champion, when he lost the title, when he tried getting the title back with Leon.
Yeah.
Like that he wasn't moving the same way that got him to the title.
There's been a lot of talk about his knees and everything. I don't know whether that's just rumors and gossip that he has to freaking... Were you the one that said podcasts ago that he has to walk downstairs backwards?
I heard that. Rumors are bullshit though, right? rumors are bullshit though. But he hasn't fought for a long time and he's getting on in age.
It's such a stupid rumor.
The guys that he's potentially going to fight are young, hungry dogs. Like Sean Brady's hungrier than ever now.
Yeah, man.
You know, it's...
I wouldn't want to be the person.
What about
Sean
Buckley?
Brady's way?
Like Buckley fight, you know, young.
Good point. Yes.
Young and hungry, dude. Machado Garry, man. Like these guys.
Buckley deserves to fight up. What did he have? 4 wins last year. Like he completely destroyed everyone.
Yep.
Buckley needs to be up there. And it all kind of depends, as I mentioned to you, on the on the Jack Della Maddalena fight versus Bilal, right? I think that's going to help figure a lot of stuff out, because you could have Buckley fight the loser of that as a hypothetical.
This whole episode's been like matchmaking. It's doing my head in.
All right, can I give you a different discussion then? One more UFC one, and then we'll move on to games, I promise. Alex Pereira, according to Joe Rogan, all right, fought his fight with Magomed Ankalaev with a broken hand and also he had norovirus. Now, this was according to Joe Rogan. And then after that, Alex Pereira did an interview with Ariel Helwani where he said, my hand was fine. I might have been dealing with stuff, but I don't want to get into it. I don't want to talk about it. Maybe I'll talk about it after the fight with Magomed Ankalaev. Clearly, there's going to be a rematch. But I just want to be focused on that fight. He wouldn't reveal exactly what happened, but it feels like, and maybe because Ariel Helwani prodded a little bit, it feels like there was something severe enough to potentially cause him to withdraw. What do you think about that situation? Is this just another case of fighters deal with stuff all the time and Alex was probably never going to pull out unless it was that bad. What do you reckon about it?
Well, the fact is fighters do deal with stuff all the time. Mm. No fighter goes into a fight 100%, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Now, mate, there are plenty of times fighters fight with legitimate excuses.
Yeah.
You can't say them though because you look like salty.
And to be clear, Alex didn't. This was exactly. Joe saying and everyone's something pulling and everyone
that's why I'm not,
him.
That's why I'm not jumping on him either. It's like his excuses are very real. And everybody has pried these out of him. He didn't say any of them.
Yeah.
But his excuses are very real. So maybe the next fight will be markedly different. Okay? There's been heaps of times that I've fought with legitimate excuses to why X, Y, and Z happened in said fight. But, you don't want to, it's such a hard, tricky position because like you don't want to talk about it, but it's a real legitimate excuse. So like, this is why him was broken, dude. It means his power just wasn't there in his moneymakers, which is the thing that has taken him all the way to titles of two divisions and kept him as the heavyweight champ until recently.
Do you think there needs to be a bit more of an open forum and just environment for fighters to be able to talk about injuries that they're encountering? I know why you wouldn't want to talk about that in the lead up. No. Why is that?
I know, we're tough. Tough motherfuckers.
Yeah, but you're also human, you know?
Watch.
Freaking Captain America here.
Sorry for my language. I apologize. Dude. Like, I hope if there is a forum, I'm going to be watching it to see if my opponent cries like a bitch. mark my words, they'll be sitting there waiting for one of us as well. You can't give an inch to those. It's a different environment. It's like we can't be human. Not for a fight. Not when you've got an opponent that's trying to take everything from you. You can't. You have to be more. Yeah, you can kind of let people pry excuses out of you afterwards, or you can just straight up tell people like after the fact. But during a fight, like I would love it if there was an open forum and I'm like a guy I'm watching is saying like how rough his life is. He's talking about stuff because I know I'm going in there. I'm gonna bully him, dude, because I know he's mentally soft. Like he's had a rough week. All right, I'm gonna give it to him. I'm gonna top it off.
To be clear, I was talking about more so after fights because in the lead up, like, do you really want to tip off like your opponent and the UFC? Okay. And, you know what I mean?
I read on a tangent with something I thought something else. Sorry,
it's fine. It's fine.
I think everybody should have someone to talk to. That's why you surround yourself. Like everybody should try their utmost. The most important thing in life, I feel, is to surround yourself with good people, trustworthy people. I talk to my wife 24/7. She's like my comrade. Mm-hmm. You know, she's my soundboard. Mm. So yeah, it's super important to whinge. She just listens to me 24/7, whinging and bitching, dude. That's who I bitch to, right? But yeah, it's super important to talk to things. I don't think forums are good, I guess.
It's good. It's more that I was curious because like I think it's human, it's natural to empathize with someone that was dealing with something serious. And you tend to see it when someone wins a fight and then they say they had an injury because they're obviously not complaining or bitching because they won the fight, right? Mm. But I feel if you can do that, I don't see there being anything wrong with a fighter who has happened to lose a fight, if it's a close fight or whatever it might be, legitimately say, yeah, I was dealing with a few things. You know what I mean? Not in the lead up, but afterwards, like I feel like we should be a little bit more accepting of that. That's just me being empathetic.
But
and
also
human.
Like how bad was it, right? Like how serious was it? Yeah, you gotta start asking people for x-rays, you gotta start asking people for scans.
But Rob, is there not pressure when you have a big fight and you're close out to not just ignore those things and just commit to the fight because you feel like you'll be letting people down?
But you have to. That's one of the things fighters have to juggle, man. That's why it's so hard. That's why not everybody can do it. Because you have to juggle all that crap.
Mm.
You know,
I love that we've had this discussion. This is like some of the most honest and open that you've been. I'm gonna say.
No, because it's true though. Like everyone's dealing with stuff.
Fair.
But there's still, I've said it before. It's like that's the hardest part about being in the sport for any amount of time is that like life happens to you whether you're fighting or not.
Yeah.
Like my wife still gets pregnant. I still having more kids. The house still has got to get paid for. I'm still moving houses, kids getting sick, et cetera, et cetera. Like life is going on. But in 12 weeks, there's going to be a dude trying to punch my head in as well.
Yeah, fair.
Right? And it's like, it's just the juggle. That's the hard part about fighting. It's the juggle.
Mm. Mm. Well, let us know what you think in the comments below. I genuinely enjoyed that discussion. We are going, because we're running long and I don't want to like have this
episode was going to be short, dude.
Look, well, let's skip the game news. There was nothing too crazy exciting this week anyways. You've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter Wilds.
I got to stop saying this should be a short episode.
You jinx it.
Every time.
Don't say it and we'll be fine. But what we're watching, playing and reading, Rob, tell us about Monster Hunter.
No, I'll tell you what I've been watching lately, okay? I just finished Solo Leveling.
What'd you think? It was good.
You watched it?
Yeah. Spoiler warning, a little bit. Like probably. We'll get into something.
I don't like it. I'm done with it.
Say that.
I'm done with it. I'm over.
Why?
It.
Give me an honest reason.
Because he went straight back to Edgelord. I'm so over it. He's too much. He's
too much.
You
know what people are saying online? That he's aura farming every episode.
Mate, there's nothing anymore. He just kills everything. Nothing's hard. Like, obviously, the dudes we saw at the end were cool. It was like, who's these guys? Like, cliffhanger, come season three. But still, he's just going to do the same thing. He's runs around owning people, right?
Yeah. Can I say, those people at the end, and this is kind of, I saw some posts about it. It's not complete spoilers, but at that current time, I was told all those people are currently stronger than Jinwoo. Currently, but you know how he has the ability to improve and everything.
Yeah.
What I hope, and I don't know, I haven't read the manhwa at all. I want to see a bit more of a, there's someone really hard that maybe he has a tough fight against and then overcomes it. Like, that's why I like the Dragon Ball Zs of the world. That's why I like, you know, like the Black Clovers of the world. Like, I get this whole thing about he is like the most powerful dude. He has unlimited potential, et cetera, et cetera. But give me a little bit of growth, you know? A little bit of a challenge. I don't know. I get what you're saying.
I don't think I like him anymore.
I thought you said you liked him because he cried about his mum.
I think, because he came back and then he went away again. He teleported through some dude's shadow and just like clicked his fingers and had a billion guys fight for him. I don't know. I'm sick of it. Like, the only thing that was like holding me in was like a potential romance.
Oh, yeah.
Even that, it's like, I'm over that too. I'm over Solo Leveling.
All right. All right. There might not be a season three. Apparently, the producer's like, I don't know if we'll get one.
I hope there's not. Okay.
That's rough, man.
Well, because there was nothing in the fights. He just overpowered every fight. There was no hardship.
Oh, okay. Hold on. There was that one moment. Where he got the skill level up. Where if he didn't get that, he probably dies. Oh,
of course he gets a skill level up mid-fight. Of course. It's like, is that really your defense? The fight's close. Let's give him a skill level up mid-combat.
That's not what I said. You said it was complete domination, and I said it wasn't quite that.
That is, though. That's the same thing. And then he levels up off him, makes him his servant, and now he's even more god-powered. Ah, man. Like.
Oh, man. That's funny.
Oh,
it's
dude.
Not that bad, Rob. It's pretty good.
I don't know. It feels empty. Granted, animation quality, outstanding.
Outstanding.
And, okay, I'm hard on it right now because I watched the whole thing, and I still think his leagues are better than 90% of the other animes right now.
Sure.
Like, especially so much season. Garbage out there right now. Yeah. But there's always garbage out there. But like it's a very good anime still. But I'm done with it now. I'm done with it.
All right. All right. No more solo leveling for Rob.
No.
But there might not be a season three, as I mentioned. So
you know what I might do? Just start up again. My Hero Academia.
Oh, really? Okay.
Problem is that I want to rewatch it with my kids. Okay. But they watch dub, and dub kills me.
Oh, actually kills me. Teach them differently, please.
Brother, they're just learning how to read.
It's a good way to do it. It's a great way to do it.
Can't give up the subtitles, man. They're sending out their words. Have a heart.
You've got to start them somewhere. Have a heart, dude. How old's your eldest? Like, at least get them into it. I reckon it's fine. You know? You gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, but my 7-year-old wants to watch it too. You know, it's gotta come kind of medium somewhere. Anyway, I want to watch it. Dub might kill my life though.
No, don't do dub.
Also, don't do it. Season 3 burns me that thing. I heard it gets good again, but
it does. It dips, but it gets better.
When All Might disappears, it makes me so sad.
But that's kind of part of the story, and he steps up.
All Might gave me motivation, bro.
I know, man.
He inspired me to be better.
then you should keep watching. You should keep watching.
Oh, yeah, I think I will.
Keep watching. I'm just if that's your whole thing, people will know what I'm talking about. Keep watching.
Okay. Well, now I'm excited because you kind of sold it to me.
It's in the last season, the later season. So
what I've been playing. I mean, I jumped back into Monster Hunter. So the end game's kind of shallow right now.
Damn.
But I decided to jump back into it because my mates jumped back into it, as well as there's a title update in a few days, so new monsters and things to kill. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd try to main a new weapon. So I've been using just Sword and Shield. I did all Worlds of Sword and Shield, and I did all of now Wilds with Sword and Shield.
Yep.
And I want something different. I'm thinking about... Okay, let me talk about, you know, people will say everyone's saying it's easy.
Sure.
I saw an argument that maybe I don't think it's easier than any other Monster Hunter. I do think it is actually a little bit easier, but it's just that a lot of people that came from Worlds have the skill sets already necessary to deal with Wilds better, whereas when Worlds came out, it was kind of a different take on the combat. It wasn't different take, but it was much smoother. The combat was different than all the other sort of games. Right, so I thought that was pretty cool. I think that was a cool perspective into why it's easier. I do think it is easier, maybe health lower or damage is upped, but that'll change in the updates. Yeah. But I'm trying to find a new main weapon. Have you played Monsters of Wilds?
I've not, but I was going to ask you, like, are you probably just going to go with like great sword, Oonga Boonga style?
I've tried great sword. I tried hammer today. I don't like him. I don't like them. Right. They're too slow, bro.
So what's your option then?
Too slow, and I just miss. And everyone's like, well, once you learn the moveset, I don't care about the moveset. I want to be able to do what I want to do at all times. At all times. You know?
You're going to give it time, though, bro.
Oh, it's just too slow. Kills me. And I'm
fair.
I don't know. I think I want to try. I'm very curious about the Hunting Horn. Have you ever played it?
No.
It's like the bard of Monster Hunter. it's like a big bonky hammer that doots as well. It's really, really cool. Like, I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Because it just looks fun.
That's huge, man.
It looks
cool.
Complicated as hell. I looked up like a crash course on YouTube today and... I just paused it and gave up, walked away. Like, it's complicated.
How good are YouTube guides, man? Just tell me what's the best and that's what I'll do.
Well, the thing is, it's like you need to play songs with your attacks and you got to cue your songs up. And it's – so you've got to – it's like doing old school PlayStation cheats. You got to be like Y, B, Y, B, B, Y, and B together. Y, B, Y, B, R2 to play it all. Then you got to do like an R2 encore, and then other crap. Okay,
in the middle of battle.
That's how you're fighting. Because like while you're doing your YBs, you're hitting. Every hit time you hit is what makes a note. It's a super cool system they've got in place. I just think it might be too big brain for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so I might try Lance as well. I'm thinking about Lance.
All right.
Just big shield, big pokey stick, hide behind shield, poke with stick. Just simple. So I'm going from complicated as hell, and I think I'm going to go just straight up smooth brain.
It scared you off so much.
Like, poke with stick. I think that's what I'm going to do.
That's pretty funny.
That's what I've been playing. What are you still 76?
I am 76, but funnily enough, a couple of weeks ago, I can talk about it now. Bethesda invited me to their offices. We did a preview of Doom the Dark Ages, id Software's new Doom game. And it's really good, man. It's really good. This is obviously for the Doom fans out there, if you like your FPSs, if you like boomer shooters, it very much is Doom, but they have taken some decisions with how it feels. So whereas Doom Eternal was very like vertical, jumping and shooting, using the grappling hook, you're quite agile in that game. This game's completely different. It's like the Doomslayer is more, and it's all in line with the medieval theme of it. He's more grounded and weighted, so he's not jumping as much, but he's more strafing left to right. And the way that the energy blasts and stuff like home in on you and attack you, it lends itself to that nicely. The weapons are very cool. You've got a shield saw that freaking you can impale enemies with and parry and just use as a shield, obviously. There's a flail as well. Again, it's very medieval. New weapon, like there's this weapon where it literally like crushes the skulls of demons you've killed and it shoots it back at other demons.
It's so excited for this.
It's such a cool concept, man. Yeah. Like whoever designed that weapon like needs to be given a bloody raise. And they have the super shotgun. They have the plasma rifles, a few other cool bells and whistles too. The thing that I'm really looking forward to about it is that, so essentially we had a tutorial level. The second level, we got to pilot this big giant mech called the Atlan, like smash through buildings, use a giant gun, punch other giant demons. That was sick. Third level, we got to fly this dragon. I wasn't too much of a fan of it. And then the fourth level, we got into this like semi-open zone area where you're encouraged to explore, find secrets, find weapons, and also just kill a bunch of demons. I really like it, man. I like how they've changed up the formula compared to Doom Eternal. I love Doom Eternal, don't get me wrong. But this is more Doom, cool soundtrack. You get to kill demons. It's a weighted, heavy, like artillery tank style Doomslayer. It's pretty sick, man. Yeah. I reckon you'd like it.
Yeah, I'm pumped to actually try it. I'm super pumped to play it because like I've always loved the concept of Doom. He's like, he's just a rough and tumble dude's wearing armor going around killing stuff. Like hell, he doesn't have godlike powers. He's like just your blue collar like you know, demon slayer.
He is.
You know what I mean? I love that concept. Nothing flashy, just get the job done. And if you're telling me that they can it's less jumpy and flashy and speedy,
correct,
then I'm all for it. I'm all for it. You had me at flail.
the flails, if you're getting close and you're smashing demons with it, it does a lot of damage. There's also a gauntlet as well. So there's a couple of melee weapons you can experiment with. I wanted to touch on that. So the whole story is he's essentially become the weapon of the gods and he's under control. It's quite cool. And he's clearly going to break out of that control at some stage and do his own thing. But I kind of like that mechanic at the start where he's being controlled to do all these crazy things. But he's still, at the end of the day, he's still shooting demons and punching them. I freaking love the Doomslayer, man. He's kind of great. I'm pumped for it. And you're definitely going to have to get it coded and try it out. I know that FPSs usually aren't up your alley, but Doom is like the cream of the crop. If you don't like Doom, you'll never like another FPS, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
Looking forward to it.
Hell yeah. But that's what I've been playing. That's what we've been playing. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. But finally, let's do some rapid fire viewer questions. Let us know your viewer questions in the comments below for upcoming episodes. First up is from @ZK3212. Hey, Rob, if the UFC can't get you a fight during International Fight Week, there's going to be a fight night in Perth later this year. If it's within a reasonable time frame, would you be down to fight here in Australia again?
I'd be super down to fight here in Australia. I've been wanting to do that for a long time. It's just timelines haven't met up. So, yes. Yeah.
Next question is @ShazCormac9808. Question for Rob. Is there any chance we could get any insight to your appearance on Tough with Chael? Chael made a video on his channel stating that the training session you lead for his fighters was one of the three best training sessions he has ever seen in his life. Much appreciate you, boys. That's high praise from Chael. That's crazy, man.
I don't know. I don't know. I just took the boys through like things that I use. Like, it's hard to, like, and more so than actual techniques I want to do, I like to go into things like my thought processes as to why I do things, because I feel like fighters can use that much more than what I actually do in the octagon, because not everyone bounces like me, not everyone moves like me, not everyone's as fast as me. So I like to, I like to try and break it down thought process wise. And, you know, if he thought it was cool from that point of view, then I just hope the guys took something from it. You know, I was only in there for a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Next question is I can't pronounce his username. I'm very sorry. You can see it too, Rob. This
I'll do it.
Do it.
Abdurrahmane Kasira 8341.
I was pretty impressive. That's a better job than I was going to do. That question is, why isn't Joaquin Buckley mentioned enough in the title conversation?
Yeah.
We touched on this. I agree. I forgot about him last episode. I agree.
We did just speak about it. So welcome.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because you're right. We did neglect Joaquin. He had an awesome last year. I feel like he needs another win to really get into there, but let's see what happens with his next fight. Next question is at Tom Baby P5X. Have you boys talked about Kingdom Come Deliverance 3 yet? Huge success and really seemed like Rob's ideal game with the combination of open world, survivorship, and brutal learning curve. Rob?
So I loved Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. Loved it. But I haven't finished it. I'm like over halfway, but I'm playing hardcore.
Yeah,
and I love hardcore in that game. But the thing is, like, when I re-downloaded it and started playing it, but when I jump back in, because it's hardcore and because there's so many things I need to like pick up again, I just can't be bothered right now. Fair. So like, it's on the to-do list.
All right. I just realized that I said Kingdom Come Deliverance 3. It's 2, right? And the 1 is the previous one.
Yeah. It's
too many games and sequels.
Kingdom Come Deliverance is stellar.
I struggled to get into the first one because it's a little bit dated now and older. It was rough.
I didn't like playing Henry. I don't like playing as him. I want to make my own guy.
I asked, and I, not really spoilers, I guess it happens at the start of the game. I asked a friend who never played the first one and got into the second. I was like, do you need to have played the first? And he's like, no, because something happened story-wise where it makes sense and it's a fresh slate. And I'm like, what'd he do? Hit his head? And that turns out that was the actual reason. Such a stupid story plot. Honestly, man.
If it works, it ain't stupid.
And last question is from at Blob the Bloob. Very important question. Would you guys rather have finger-sized nipples or nipple-sized fingers, Rob?
Oh, wow. Finger-sized nipples for questions. Sure, dude.
Yeah.
What are you doing with nipple-sized fingers?
You can't live your life. Dude, what are you going to do?
You're doing nothing. You're doing nothing. You're stumps.
But could you imagine... That's a hazard in the UFC, man. Just you're fighting without a shirt on.
Yes. You get used to it. You get used to it, dude.
All right, keep these questions coming. I remember the question that was like, would you rather fight 50 duck-sized Volks or whatever? That was great. These questions are great.
Yeah.
But that was episode 62 of the MMA Arcade podcast. Thank you for listening until this time. I think we've hit a normal length episode. I think it's about an hour long. It's hard to tell. But Rob, as always, closing thoughts.
Just about. Just thank you, everyone, for hanging around, listen to us yap on. And if you are new, please do sub. Spread it around. Tell your friends. I want that 100,000 YouTube plaque that Johnny keeps throwing in my face. So. Oh,
man. We'll get there. Give it some time.
Appreciate you guys.